You're listening to
the DEA Podcast.
Opinions expressed on the DEA Podcast are merely the streaming thoughts of the host and guests and should not be relied upon or acted upon without further due diligence. If you do not agree to this, then you must immediately switch off and run far, far away. Permission to republish the DEA Podcast is permitted, providing a link to the show notes is included.
Podcast@energy-performance-certificate.org.
Well, for December 2007, Mike C. blundering through this, the 21st episode of the DEA Podcast. This week's rant, podcasters who can't get even the most basic of details correct. They should be struck off, frankly. There I was, just a couple of weeks ago, ranting on about the work that goes into preparing for these shows, when last week I goes and introduces Paul Broadhead as, well, first off, Paul Broadhurst, and then, correcting myself, Paul Broadbent. Broadbent. Where the hell did that come from? It didn't stop there. Not only did I go on to crown him as Deputy Chief Executive, when in fact he's actually the Deputy Director General, I also said he was from, wait for it, the Association of Hip Pack Providers. Hip Pack Providers? This is unforgivable, quite frankly, and whilst I applaud Paul for both his modesty and polite restraint, I really should have been slapped down, so note to all any future guests, don't hesitate to slap me down if I get anything wrong. I can only apologise, Paul. I'm embarrassed that I should, most of all, get your surname incorrect. But anyway, thank you for being so lenient. Ladies and gentlemen, this week, I'm sure my next guest won't have any problem in slapping me down because he has a few things on his chest. Will you please welcome Peter Ambrose of The Partnership Limited. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Mike.
Thank you for coming on. Pleasure to have you aboard. You have some strong thoughts about the hip industry as a hip provider yourself. Am I correct in saying you are a hip provider?
We are, absolutely. We've been in the business about 3 years now, so we've been around the block a few times. And yes, I do have some very strong opinions about the hip business, especially the way that it seems to be manifesting itself in reality since August.
I think this is an important topic to cover now because a lot of DEAs are finding that they are having, or feel that they have to compete in the marketplace in the hip provision business rather than purely as DEAs. And as such, really, we should cover this topic because there are clearly some pitfalls which you are identifying. And, you know, personally, I think it's good that you are identifying them, and hence why I've asked you to come on. You wrote a very interesting article last week in the Rick's Safe As publication, if that's the best word for it, which we'll study in depth later. But first of all, Peter, why don't you just tell us all a little bit about yourself and why your doctor allowed you to come into this profession?
My background was legal, and having spent sort of years and years looking at the whole sort of legal industry and how it can be improved, and then having spent quite a lot of time in the technology business, when HIPS finally became law, just over 3 years ago, we looked at this and said, look, here was a service industry that required legal expertise, but with a good understanding of technology and customer service. So we formed the company back in November 2004, just after the law went through. And from January the 1st of that year, 2005, we started working in the business. Our goal from the outset was to try and support the aims of HIPS, which when they were first launched was to make the whole process of buying and selling houses more predictable, more transparent and so forth. And so we set out with those sort of quite high lofty aims to say, well, let's do a good job. Let's try and minimize the impact of HIPS on those agents, on estate agents, and to try and recognize the benefits and the genuine benefits that you can get from them. And really what we did over the last 2 or 3 years was we established ourselves with a lot of credibility with a lot of very senior agents. And also, you know, as part of the early adopter scheme for the government, we were the first people, for example, to produce a home condition report the first people to produce a full hip. This was going back 2 years ago now. In leasehold property, unregistered title, more complex issues, but also just looking at how we can provide a complete service. So, as I say, we spent 2 years planning for it, and then finally in August, we got going with the relatively small number of agents, but very prestigious agents, and started producing hits.
Okay. Am I right in saying that you offer a white label hip?
We do it to a very limited degree. We work with a very small number of solicitors who use us, who recognise the importance of quality, and who use us for producing their own, so white labelling. We have teamed up with a number of energy inspectors over the past 6 months who have looked for a white label service. Being blunt, it hasn't come to much. I was quite hopeful that this would be a useful route to market, but really it hasn't materialised.
Why do you say that? Is because of volume or?
No, because the energy inspectors have been unable to pick up business. So what we've been doing is supporting them, giving them materials, giving them technical support, giving them a system that works, but the energy inspectors that we're working with have been unable to foster a strong enough story with estate agents to make it stick. And these are really credible inspectors and assessors with very good, very professional. That's why we chose them. But to date, you know, the apathy amongst agents and the unwillingness to move away from either the large providers or local solicitors and so forth has meant that it's been quite difficult for them to actually get any work.
Do you think that domestic energy assessors, in your personal opinion, have any business selling a white label HIP product?
I've got one rule in business, and that is stick to the knitting. You should do what you want to do as your business and not try and cover all bases. And it irritates me greatly when I see people who have got potentially perfectly viable business for whatever reason saying, well, okay, and we should do this and we should do that just because to make up for shortfalls in other areas that isn't our core business. We don't do energy performance certificates ourselves because we're not energy inspectors. We never will be energy inspectors. That's not what we do. We don't do conveyancing because it's not what we do. We are a construction house for home information packs offering service on that. And when I see people saying, well, okay, I'm doing energy performance certificates, that's my skill, that's what I've learned to do, that's what I've trained to do, or therefore I can therefore go out and believe the promises that are made to me by white label providers, that they will take away all the headaches of the hips and it's going to be very easy to do and I can manage that entire process myself, I get very concerned because, again, it's this lack of focus and not sticking to the knitting.
You said you had a legal background. Now, when you're dealing with housing transactions, clearly that must be an advantage and a necessity even. Do you think this weakness in a DEA's armoury, if you like, will play a part in offering the HIP provision service?
I think what people have to understand about HIPs is that whilst what we end up with is, you know, a couple of hundred pages of printed documentation, it shouldn't be confused with what is a HIP provision service. We spend probably 75% of our time advising our clients on the legalities and issues to do with HIPs themselves. That is what our clients want. They take as given that we can produce HIPs, but what they really need and where we add value is to be able to interpret the law and support our clients. We're picking up clients literally every few days, additional offices of existing clients and so forth, where people are looking for support and advice. And unless you can have a clear grasp of the law and a good understanding of it and be able to point agents to that, then it's going to make it more difficult to provide that complete service. And unfortunately, if you're going into this saying, well, yes, oh, we push a button and you get a hit out of it, which is how, to be fair, the white label providers are offering it. Oh, it's very simple. You don't need to know anything. What you're doing is you're diminishing your value that you can sell to the estate agent, so much so that the estate agent turns around and says, well, I can work with this inspector, or I can work with this assessor, or whoever, but you know what? I could go next door because it could be cheaper, because you can't offer that extra value. And that's what they're looking for. when people start off, they start off by saying, oh, well, I just want it cheaply. Just as long as it's cheap, then that's fine. But what we're finding is actually what estate agents really want is they want someone to take the problem away from them. And that includes having the necessary backup and expertise to support them if they have any issues or concerns, because the agent is on the hook. And that's what we have found in our experience is what our clients are looking for.
Are you concerned about certain HIP provision players in the market expanding purely in the interests of gaining market share too quickly and not appreciating the back-end support that's going to flow from this once the volume picks up?
We've already seen this, absolutely, and I've warned about this publicly. Talking with some of the largest companies out there, they were rather taken aback by the amount of support that they had to do, and they weren't expecting this. Consequently, I've seen customer attrition from those accounts. Certainly, the larger companies, the feedback that we're getting is that their support, that they have problems with the support side of things and talking to people that are knowledgeable about it. It's a challenge because it's a new topic and I sympathize, and they've got to be high volume players. But what agents, especially with all the confusion, and there's a lot of complexity this. It does irritate me a little bit when people say, oh, HIPs, it's very straightforward. You know, when you're getting into areas like new build issues, unregistered title, leasehold and so forth, there is much more complexity than I think a lot of people give credit for. And unfortunately, there is this ramp-up time that people and that larger firms need to get their staff trained. And it's a challenge for them. I sympathize because we obviously need the volume players. All industries need people to sweep up the large volumes of transactions. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's selling suites or legal services. You've got to have that for the vast majority. But it does make it a challenge when it's such a complicated topic such as this.
Okay, well, you say you've been at this now for 3 years, is it?
Three years last month, yes.
Oh. There's quite a lead-in time for yourselves. You must have been trading during this period, I presume.
We were trading. We started trading in January 2005. And what we were doing in that time is we were doing a little bit of consultancy, doing the odd HIP here or there. But to be honest, it was 2 years of investment.
Really?
It really was. We didn't start to see a return on this, you know, really in the first 2 years at all, apart from some training and consultancy.
Yes.
So yes, it was a lot of commitment.
And I dare say you're still waiting for a return now.
Yes, I can in the days.
How tough has this been on yourself and the business, Pete?
It's a challenge. I never lost focus in where we wanted to go to, who we wanted to sell to. But I have to say, August the 1st couldn't have come quick enough. Not for any financial reasons. That we had sufficient backing to make it work, but just to bring some certainty and to start actually trading and to start to be able to improve the business. It was very challenging because you didn't know what the issues were that you were going to be getting into. No one knew. I always used to say my favorite line was, you show me a HIP expert, because there aren't any.
Yeah. Like,
but everyone used to be claiming, all my competitors were claiming they were experts in HIPs, and my argument to agents was there's no such thing.
Likewise with DEAs.
Exactly. It was very, very tough. You know, people would say, we want you, especially in our sector of the market, we want you to have experienced people. And I said, will you explain to me how we're going to do that? So I said, well, no, we haven't got experienced people, but we've got very cautious people.
Has your mental image of how government is run been changed during this process?
Overall, I've been quite disappointed. Mainly because I felt that the government could have been more aggressive. I'm not going to criticise them for lack of marketing or the usual hobby horses. What I'm going to criticise them for is they could have been far more cavalier than they have been. And that's been quite disappointing. I've also been astonished by the lack of feedback that we get. We're on the HIP subcommittee, we're on an early adopter, we're a leading case story on their website. You know, we're quite well known to them. We received no information from them that wasn't out in the wider populace. Very disappointing. And that was very, very disappointing and quite an eye-opener, actually. because I really thought that, and everyone assumed, because we were going to these meetings and we had top level, you know, discussions, and we were brought in to advise and on leasehold matters and so forth and historic buildings, that we would be privy to all this thinking that was going on behind the scenes. I don't know whether there was much going on behind the scenes, because if there was, we certainly weren't made aware of it in any unique form.
I think what this whole HIP process has done is made at least 6,000 citizens more actively engaged with the process of government, if nothing else. I mean, yeah. I've found myself watching Parliament TV. You know, I never thought I'd actually do that.
I did go to the House of Commons for a couple of the important votes, and I'd never done that before. So, and you meet some interesting people there as well. So what was most interesting was that all the people in the public gallery were anti-HIPs, and there were none of the pro-HIPs people there, which was quite interesting.
But you said that you didn't think they were aggressive enough. Don't you think that, in fact, they have been overly aggressive in certain aspects, when you consider that just when I first looked at this in February, they announced that energy performance certificates and HIPs would become live on July the 1st, and training, you know, would happen now, when there was very few training players providers at the time in the marketplace, and the regulations hadn't even been formally signed off.
Well, bearing in mind that they'd already put the date back 6 months. I mean, originally it was January, and then they put it back to June. And that was because, obviously, for a number of concerns. Yes, they used the example of the number of inspectors. I always thought that they were being too conservative on that. We had a good idea of the number of people that were going to training. Fair enough, we didn't take into consideration the inordinate delay that there was going to be in getting accreditation, which I still find amazing to this day. It would take people 2 or 3 months to get accredited once they'd gone there, you know, once they had finished their training. But they had delayed it. But they also, it was more the watering down of what they included in it, was my view, in that they set reasonably aggressive goals for the numbers of assessors and inspectors that were needed. But, you know, my theory was always the market will find a way. If you produce an industry, then people will go into it. And this is exactly what's happened. And, you know, you can't buck the market. Now, that was why I was never worried, because estate agents would always say to me, that'd be their first question, do you think there'll be enough inspectors in time? My answer was always unequivocally, yes, of course there will be, because people will see an opportunity and will go into it.
But
so I think, you know, they could have, they were perfectly justified in sticking with the original timescales.
But though, Peter, we had the rollback of HCRs precisely because there weren't enough.
Again, cowardice, putting it politely, because they said there weren't enough inspectors. There were a lot in training. There were a lot that were going through the training process, and they looked at that current number and they said it's too much of a risk, we can't go forward with it. And I think they could have, again, the market would have found a way. I honestly believe that.
Okay, let's just cover a bit of the news that's happened in the last week, which there hasn't been a great deal of. I have to say it's been quite quiet, really.
You're listening to the DEA podcast.
All I've got really is the ongoing disaster that lies in wake of the Habitus Surveyors collapse a couple of weeks ago. It seems that rumours seem to be substantiated, at least, that the directors have now jumped overboard onto the Habitus Franchising Limited and are continuing to trade from that entity and offering DEAs, EPCs, if they're up for it, at £35 a throw. And there is a lot of anger amongst DEAs that were supposedly employed by them, understandably. What are your thoughts on this, Peter? I mean, I know in your Rick Safaz article, you do allude to the price being paid for EPCs.
It's very interesting. I mean, we pay possibly amongst some of the highest prices for EPCs on the market. I mean, we don't pay, we never pay less than £100, and we will typically pay up to £150, so considerably higher. Now, that's actually what makes our hips more expensive than other people. When I do see very low prices, because I do get agents saying to me, oh, you know, you can get EPCs very cheaply now, my standard response is, well, you really are going to get what you pay for with that, aren't you? And when you start doing the maths with £35, you know, for the amount of travelling that needs to be done and the costs and so forth, you do have to question the quality of the work that you're going to get and the quality of the people. And overall, more and more I get, the feedback is the DEA community is very variable in quality. And I do get this. And what's most interesting is it's agents telling me this now. So that's not my opinion. This is what agents are now saying. Oh, I've heard that they vary in quality a lot, these DEAs. I thought, well, is that because they're having people knock on their doors, which is happening? DEAs are going to agents knocking on the doors, and the agents are drawing their own conclusions about what sort of person would do a hit for an EPC for £35. So you would have to question whether it was viable at all, unless you were employed. I think for a self-employed person, £35 is not worth. It's not worth doing.
The mere number says, we're desperate for work. We're just going to throw everything at it now and just see what comes back.
It is. It's in much the same light that you've seen a couple of hit providers giving Christmas specials. Christmas specials, yeah. Bit slow at the moment. Let's discount our hips. Fantastic business model. Fully sustainable for the future. Yeah, bring it on. We had someone call up yesterday. Oh, are you doing a Christmas discount special? No, that's not how we run our business. We run our business on proper margins that make sure that we're here in 6 months' time. And as you say, if you desperation is the £35. Yeah. Good luck to them.
Sell your house for Christmas. I mean, people don't sell houses for Christmas, do they?
Yeah. Well, they do if they get £50 off their hip.
Oh, do they? Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely, because basically hips drive house sales, as I'm learning. I didn't realise that till this week, but I realise now that if you can get £50 off a hip, then you're going to put your property on the market.
Well,
you learn something new every day.
Clearly, I must be slow in this. I'll have to put mine up then.
You must be, because I'll tell you, if you go, you'll be able to get a good deal with some hip providers, and that'll save you £50.
Okay. Thanks for that advice, as a legal man.
That's okay.
as an aside to this, though, Peter, I wrote an article last night on the blog about the number of people with a bad credit reference to the name. Last week I mentioned that AXA had a survey done on its behalf saying that around 4 million adults had a credit blacklist against them. And yesterday, David Perkins, who writes for Estate Agency News, and apparently quite a prominent figure in the upper echelons of that field, has given anecdotal evidence, if you like, of someone who has not been able to get a HIP because they were turned down because of the credit reference. So they're unable to sell the house, and they are a distressed seller, if you like, trying to avoid repossession by preempting that. They can't move. So, you know, what happens here, given the current market economy at the moment, it's going to be a reoccurring tale, I think. And I feel that, you know, the media at some point will jump on this, and Grant Shapps will be amongst them as well.
It's a very interesting problem. And I've always been concerned about, you know, these deferred payment agreements, especially those that are consumer credit regulated. You know, what happens if people can't pay? It is an issue. Yeah, absolutely. Because the other problem has been, of course, is that, again, the industry missed an opportunity to improve things by saying to people, oh, that's okay, you don't have to pay for your HIP until the property completes. With big promises, and in reality, like everything in life, it's turned out to be a little bit more complicated than people had made out, and that has meant going down the consumer credit regulated route. There are alternate providers out there, so that don't rely on consumer credit laws. However, there will always be an element of credit checking.
Big bloke knocking on your door every week, yeah. That kind of credit checking.
I couldn't possibly comment.
All right. I have always felt that this could be potentially the Achilles heel of the industry. we'll see how it pans out, obviously. But I think it has the potential to also change the industry, because I've always wondered how estate agents will react to the market, given that the previous model was back end invoice, if you like.
Yeah.
And now we're asking upfront. And I know one of the local agents here, who's quite a large player, is going to be billing for it in the back end of the deal. And, you know, to overcome this potential problem, I can see perhaps estate agents may have to assume the risk on this.
There is an element of that. I mean, when we started the business, I did assume, you know, as one of the founders, was that this is how the model would work, was that the estate agent would take the risk. And now what we found is, overall, estate agents have said, no, we're not going to take the risk on this. And they've distanced themselves to them. And now that's brought with it its own problems. But, we've got a few of our clients that do it that way, but certainly not the majority.
I think, though, that might change given time, because it's all about sales at the end of the day, isn't it? They want all the business.
Yeah, it might too. I mean, certainly I've heard estate agents say, look, we are price sensitive because we believe next year is going to be very competitive and we may have to eat the cost of the home information pack. And that being the case, I need to minimize the cost of it, which is depressing, to be frank. Because if you minimize the cost, you lose service and you lose quality. With no question about it.
I agree. We can cover that a little bit more later. Just to finish off the Habitus item, apparently someone has discovered that the administrators are as follows. B&C Associates are the company apparently acting as administrators, and they are at Trafalgar House, Grenville Place, Mill Hill, two words, London, NW73SA. And the telephone number 0208 906 7730. I'll probably stick them on the show notes. The last news item I have here is the ongoing fight between Quidos and Hess. Apparently, Hess have now until tomorrow to settle their payment dispute before the winding up petition on them goes to the next level. I don't know really what that next level is, but I don't imagine it being very pleasant. As of today, there are no further developments to report. And just to remind folk, 52 DEAs have had their qualifications withheld until Hess pay the disputed amounts. And furthermore, a significant additional number of DEAs have had their accreditations suspended because, Quidos say, the PI policy held by Hess do not have the relevant PI cover for what are apparently its subcontracting DEAs. So, a warning there. There is apparently a legal precedent in this matter with Merit versus... Oh, that's good research, isn't it? I've forgotten what the case was now, but I was reading up on it the other day. And it also relates to something that the Independent Surveyors Association wrote in relation to Habitus Surveyors' predicament, reminding people in their newsletter that people who are still working or for Habitus Surveyors to check their policy, because this same precedent, legal precedent, applies there as well. Make sure you're insured, in other words. Okay, that was the news, short and brief.
You're listening to the DEA podcast.
Hi, Peter. Let's talk about your article, Rick Safaz. You mentioned on the subject of delays obtaining documents for the HIP that to alleviate bottlenecks would require that all HIP providers include complete documentation and use material acceptable to solicitors rather than just meet statutory minimum requirements. As it is, HIPs tend to contain motley collection of documents that may or may not include accurate and authorised documentation. Can you expand on that, Peter?
Yes, basically what you've got within a HIP is you've got a minimum requirement that is needed to comply with the law, that the searches and so forth. However, there's one thing complying with the law, and there's another thing that is making the HIP actually useful so that conveyancers actually use it. And I think the HIP industry seems to forget that in the rush for market share and volume and to see how quickly we can turn these around. they forget what HIPs are intended for, which is to be given to the solicitor, the buyer solicitor. They're not for consumers. Again, another fundamental misunderstanding about HIPs. They are to be given to the buyer solicitor so that the work, the preparatory work that they would have traditionally done in the past has already been completed. Now, if the documentation is not acceptable to that solicitor, that HIP is worthless. No matter how you add it up, that HIP is absolutely worthless. And it's criminal, frankly, that consumers are paying for products that are worthless. If solicitors do not accept the contents of a HIP, then it has no value. And whilst a lot of people get very upset when I say things like that, and they decry the value of their, whether it's their search content or whether it's any kind of aspect of the HIP, if the solicitors don't accept it, then I'm sorry, it's worthless, and it shouldn't have been printed in the first place.
What we're talking about here is incomplete documentation, correct?
Yes. So, for example, when you're looking at a title deed, I mean, the anecdotal information that the anecdotal feedback we're getting at the moment, for example, properties with multiple titles. Very frequently, solicitors are now getting properties with just single titles that would refer to another title but are not included. They may actually refer to other documents that go up to make up the evidence of that title. Again, not included because they don't have to be. The problem, therefore, comes in that the buyer solicitor then says, well, I'm going to have to get this documentation because obviously they can't determine a good, what's called a good root of title. So therefore, the buyer solicitor then goes away and carries out effectively the same work all over again. So incomplete information. The vast majority of HIPs that are on the market today contain the basic title documentation from Land Registry, but do not contain the additional, what they're called, referred documents that need to be included for the solicitor to be able to make a, take a view on the case. If you don't include them, solicitor can't take a view, therefore no value.
A problem of the HIP, or is it a problem of low-cost HIPs?
Low-cost HIPs. Low-cost, undoubtedly. If you were to do a proper HIP, you would include things such as, for example, environmental searches where necessary, coal mining searches where necessary. Because that's what advances are doing today. The whole principle behind HIPs is to take what people are doing today and move it down the chain to introduce it earlier into the process. If we are in effect saying, well, yes, what they're doing today is irrelevant because we've got HIPs, we're fundamentally misunderstanding the buying and selling process with properties. If what we're saying is, well, we can get away with doing the absolute minimum because the other side is going to, they're going to get these searches anyway, then why bother doing it in the first place?
I've read accounts of HIPs coming back. I'm not sure what elements of the HIPs, but basically saying couldn't determine information covered by insurance. Basically just sort of saying, hey, we haven't got the information. If it's not right, sue us.
Well, yes, this is this. It's this new. That's right. I mean, you know, what you're looking for. You know, what you're looking at there is potentially, for example, things like personal local authority searches, a subject which a lot of people get very upset about and get very cross about. We question these at all, apart from solicitors, that is, who take a very balanced view on it. We do a tiny proportion because we're forced to, for competitive reasons, by a couple of our agents to do personal searches. We use a very reputable company and they're very good and they take good care of the quality and so forth. But if the information is not available to them, is not made available to them by the local authority, then yes, we will have local authority searches with information in there saying, no, this information is not available. But the good news is that with every one of those, we include an insurance policy, which we pay for, include in the price of the HIP, and the search company, as all search companies do, carry high level of insurance, PI insurance, which is fantastic when you can't sell your house.
But isn't this a bit of a cop-out, though? Can't people just fall back on this because of time pressures? Just sort of, right, can't find that answer in time. Sue us if it goes wrong.
Absolutely. Personal searches, despite what anyone says, are fundamentally insurance-backed products. Now, the reason for that is unfortunately a little bit irrelevant. But the reality is that local authorities, you know, in many ways, like the sewage and the drainage companies, they only make certain information available. Now, I do have some sympathy for the personal search companies that want to do a good job and want to get all this information but can't. But unfortunately, that's the reality. And if they can't obtain that information, whether it's building control information, environmental health and so forth, then it's unfortunate and wrong. And I'm not here supporting what local authorities do, but the reality is it devalues the content of the search. And that's the reality, and people get very upset about this. But unfortunately, whether we like it or not, there is a monopoly at the local authority. And yes, we need to do something about it. Yes, local authorities need to be taken to task, and they are being taken to task, and they are being forced to compete. But it's not a level playing field.
Okay. You also wrote, when agents start to find their clients complaining about the lack of acceptability of their HIPs and experience delays as a result of slow responses from energy assessors. Now, there are two issues here, so let me start with the first one. Is HIP acceptability being widely disputed in your experience?
What, in other words, solicitors not accept it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Yes, it is. Yes.
How?
Yes, it is. And you only have to talk to estate agents to ask them that. Estate agents, on the whole, will say to me, what's the point? Solicitors aren't accepting them. I get that all the time.
How widespread is this problem, then?
I can't speak for the whole market, obviously, but certainly within our client base, not with our HIPs, but because we use authorized searches. But it seems to be, I can't speak for the whole market, to be fair, but certainly I have heard this a lot amongst my client base. Anecdotally, clients giving me the story saying, well, what's the point in them? Because solicitors don't accept them, right?
It's a worrying one, isn't it, as the market develops?
It is a very worrying one because it discredits the whole scheme. And, you know, potentially, you know, if this does continue, then, and to be fair, the Law Society and the solicitors need to look at the way that this works, as do the lenders. Now, the lenders are changing and becoming more forgiving for the use of personal searches. They are, where they're now saying, well, okay, if it's backed up by the Property Codes Compliance Board, then we will be more willing to that. But more often than not, it will come down to the lender saying to the solicitor, are you prepared to accept the risk of this missing information?
It is
a problem. It is a problem.
Is it not that the solicitors are just generally resistant to this?
There is certainly an element, and I talk to a lot of hospital solicitors, there is certainly an element of solicitors saying, we'll do what we can to undermine this process. There is an element, a small element of people I've spoken to. Yes, I would say
so
that.
So they're deliberately knocking them back, disputing them in every...
In my experience, I have spoken to solicitors who have said, well, it shouldn't be part of the conveyancing, but it's not part of the conveyancing process. If people think it is, then they're wrong. And they are certainly, there certainly seems to be an element of that, yes. Which has to change. It has to change.
Undoubtedly. And hopefully it will. But I suppose they're, you know, in a way, they're looking at this, and from the experiences you've described about the watering down of HIPs and all the other things we've spoken about thus far, as a profession themselves, they're probably sitting on the sidelines worried about the watering down also.
Well, there is. I mean, you know, the whole change. I mean, there are some massive changes coming into the law over the next year with the changes to the Legal Services Bill, which enables non-lawyers to own law firms, you know, the so-called Tesco law. They are very concerned about the large companies coming in and providing high street law, erosion of margins. And it is a genuine threat. And I sympathize.
I did say there was two issues. The other one was, why slow responses from energy assessors? What's happening there?
We are getting quite a lot of feedback from agents that energy inspections taking 2 or 3 weeks to complete.
I've not heard of this, to be honest. This is a new one on me.
To be fair, what I have heard over the last month, that things are getting better. Now, I don't know if that's because there's a slowdown in the instruction rate and so forth, but I've certainly heard on quite a few occasions now, certainly in the first 3 months, and it could be now that, you know, and bearing in mind we're very early days, that for some reason, and I can't put my finger on it, maybe it was something to do with one particular company or several, I don't know, where it was taking a long time to get an energy inspector on site, which I find amazing, bearing in mind the numbers that are available and the keenness that people want this work. I can only put it down to the incompetence of the way that the instructions were being placed.
Or the fee?
Because it's shocking, really. I mean, I just can't believe it. But I had people, yes, it took 3 weeks to get an inspector. I had someone, eight weeks. I mean, it's crazy. But that's not a reflection at all on inspectors or anything like that. It's a purely reflection on the mechanics not working.
How many hands does an EPC go through before it reaches the DEA? Any idea, Pete? I mean, I know it will vary depending on where the EPC originates from, but can you give any examples?
Sorry, what do you mean?
I've heard of instances where an estate agent will pass the instruction over to a big player who in turn passes it over to one of their panels.
Oh, right.
And then gets allocated. Yeah. It just goes through a maze of transactions.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean, with us, for example, we work with inspectors directly, with assessors directly, but typically it goes through one step, which is through to our panel.
In your case, I remember reading, I think it was on another Rick Safaz article, I could be wrong though, and I counted the layers involved. I think it was four different layers.
They could well be. Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
I have come across this. I mean, certainly we were working with a company that told us they were doing it directly. Later transpired they were subcontracting it, who were subcontracting it. So yes, I have had that. We put a stop to that when we found out that was what was happening, because again, we were finding that reports were taking 2 weeks to come back, and we couldn't work out why. And it was only when we dug into it, we found that the people weren't actually doing the reports themselves, but they told us they were.
And you wonder why people are waiting ages to get paid when each of those players have to in turn wait their 30
course.
Days.
Yeah.
Blah blah
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
You also do hint towards the low fees being paid, and you say in the article, I'm quoting, "For some providers, completing energy reports in a timely manner is proving a challenge. It is not uncommon to hear of the assessment taking 3 weeks to be returned." We've already gone over that. "For most agents and solicitors, the fee for the energy report will determine the quality of the assessor willing to carry out such work and the speed with which it will be completed. Agents are already reporting that the quality of assessors is variable, and most agree that paying low fees will inevitably have a negative impact on the quality of the person prepared to do the work."
Mm.
Well, I applaud you for saying that, particularly in the RICS, where it has a wide audience and influential audience, if it's being read by that particular audience.
Mm.
But this is truthfully your assessment of the situation, is it? I mean, I would have thought, yes, okay, there are assessors perhaps that shouldn't be in the game, and I've spoken to panels who have said that they've struck off those assessors. It's not really about money, is it, at this stage? You don't get a poor assessor at the moment because you're paying poor fees. It's a case of people are just scrabbling for the work now. So is this
it is? I mean, I one thing that I can't find out for reality is whether people are genuinely turning down jobs. I mean, people say if it's, anecdotally you hear people say, I'm not going to take low price work. I don't know. It's like us. We never turn down any work. We don't turn down work. If people offered us work, we will take it. I would assume that that is the case with energy assessors. I don't know. I don't know what's happening in the broader market. But I know that, for example, the assessors that we work with are quite keen to retain their fees at a sensible level. And I said to them, okay, at what price would you not take work from us? And they've been very clear. They've said, you know, we won't drop below £80 or whatever.
Well, good for them. Say more.
I think I'm right in thinking that I honestly believe they wouldn't. They wouldn't take the work.
What are your thoughts on the HIP provision services offering the £150 HIPs?
Well, in my view, if you're going to run a business, it's got to make money. And if you're doing £150, this is less the EPCs, yes?
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah. Hello, yes. I was going to say, you're not making money on that. And if you're not making money, then you're not going to be around. You have to make a margin. Everyone seems to be against HIP providers making a margin because they perceive the business to be very straightforward. If you can't make money, you can't pay your staff, you can't give the service that people need. And it's as simple as that. You know, I had someone say to me the other day, giving very, very low price HIPs, fine, we never compete on price because we need to make not ridiculous margins, but sensible margins to keep us in business. Like any sensible business. And so these very, very low prices, we can't compete, we won't compete.
Seems to me that because of the hugely different fees involved with searches across the country, it seems to me that you are really winging it, for one. And secondly, that once the volume does pick up, there's going to be a tremendous pressure on these companies to upskill, upstaff, relocate to larger premises. Technology needs to be improved. How on earth they can do that on the margins?
It's very thin margins they're working on. I mean, just to come back to the point about variable pricing, pricing only varies across the country with authorised searches. With part of the reason why people use personal searches in the main is because it's consistent pricing. So they haven't, at least they haven't got to worry too much about that. But you know, we're only one of a couple of companies that offer authorized searches. We offer it at a fixed price, but we look at that and we take a view on that in terms of, you know, we set our price accordingly to make it work. But it's king on thin margins. It's very, very difficult to grow your business.
LMS said in an interview a few weeks ago that they foresee the smaller HIP providers going under because once the volume does kick in, they simply won't be able to cope with the work involved.
I agree. So those people that are looking to work with very low margins, hoping to make it up in volume, the amount of work that is required, whether it's quality checking, whether it's telephone service, anything like this, it will prove a challenge if you cannot afford to employ staff to support you.
Something that you alluded to in the article there is the number of support inquiries as a result of the HIPs, because, you know, they're either not understood or they're incomplete or whatever, you know, has to be factored into your cost base, this, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And people haven't. They've said, oh, we push a button and once it's gone, you know, send and forget. Well, send a HIP, it's electronic, there's no cost, there's no service cost, it's gone. Totally underestimated it. Certainly for those HIPs that are not thrown straight in.
What's your view on private sales websites, Pete? The legal position.
The legal position. Well, I mean, we've been reading for the last 10 years that you know, every few weeks that there's a new website that's going to put estate agents out of business. We've not seen that happen. In terms of private sales, they will need a HIP. Because even though you are selling it yourself, that shows again the extent of the misunderstanding with HIPs. If you are promoting the property to more than one person yourself, you need a HIP. So those people thinking that they can use a website to overcome that because they're marketing it to more than one person, they will require it. Enforceability is another issue.
Yeah, a few months ago, I made a blog post about a particular website. I won't name, but it's on the blog anyway. But I don't particularly want to single them out because I do believe he's actually a genuine guy. Under the misapprehension that it's legal for him to offer this service, where they circumvent the HIP requirements because they see themselves as introducing the buyers and sellers privately, if you like. Yet at the same time, we'll send out SMX text alerts and publish photographs and property details on the website.
Yeah, they're in there. There's a problem there.
I would think so.
Yeah, I would think so.
You're not a panel, are you, Pete?
No, we're not.
But you have DEAs on your books, selectively.
We work with a small number. What we try and do is, where possible, if an agent comes to us and said, and we're getting this more and more now, which I think could be useful to know, the agents are saying, we've met this person, he's come into the office, he's presentable, he's well, could you use him as your preferred inspector? And we say, absolutely, because it's the greatest endorsement that anyone can do. And I would encourage people to do that, because where that works, if the agent's happy, then we're happy. And what we do is we immediately say, right, for these properties or for that agent, for that office in that part of the country, can we please use this particular assessor? And absolutely, we recommend that. We do, however, work with floor planning companies. That's our first port of call, who are doing EPCs as well, employ people that do energy performance certificates. That works very well, and that's by the choice of our clients, and that's working very effectively.
Could you just briefly describe how your business model works here? Because you're not a panel, but you have preferred DEAs which can come on to your books, which get the work. Yeah. You have a one fee, £100 EPC charge the DEA gets. Describe how this works in practice.
Yeah, sure. We have several people that we work with. The way that we work is the fees are, as I say, it's £100 for up to four beds and £150 for anything else. So that is fixed fees. So some they do well on, some, you know, it might take them a bit longer, but it's still reasonable fees. What we do is we use, it ends up as being about three companies for particular offices. And we then instruct those people where is required. And what we do is we then manage the whole payment flow through that way, so that we take the instruction and then pay the inspectors or the via the panel. Our key panel is energy experts, and we pay through that panel, who then pays on to the assessor. Right. So it's a very our business model is very, very straightforward. There's no complexity. We don't pay referral fees. We don't pay commissions or anything like that. It's very, very clean. It's fixed price. We have one price for one size property, one price for another. Very straightforward. Everybody knows where they stand with us.
And you, how do you get your work?
How do we get what assessors or
perhaps?
We work directly with estate agents.
Okay, so you have I suspect contracts in place with estate agents. You've won through your own efforts.
That's right. We work with the larger firms of estate agents.
Nationally.
That's right. Yes, it is.
Okay. Right then, we're probably coming up to time now. This is the time when you get to pimp your site, Peter. So pimp away.
Absolutely. Our website is www.thepartnershiplimited, that's LIMITED.com.
Are you looking? Go ahead.
I was going to say, and if you look on that website, we have a monthly newsletter. We're the only company that has consistently produced a newsletter for the last 2 years. We publish it every third Monday of the month. It goes out every month. Very simple. We recommend people sign up. That we've got 2,000 opted-in subscribers to that, which is one of the highest subscription newsletters around. We've also introduced a new section on our website called Hip Knowledge, which is a segmented area of frequently asked questions, which is getting tremendous feedback. In the first 3 weeks, we had 10,000 queries on it. It's going very, very well, and we would encourage people to take a look at that. Answers a lot of the questions that agents have been putting to us about HIPs, the more technical issues, and the more in-depth one that goes far beyond just the usual frequently asked questions that you see about HIPs. And we would always encourage people to take a look there. That's all on our site.
Brilliant. Are you inviting anyone to apply to your company for any? I mean, you haven't got a panel, so I don't suppose that's really relevant, actually.
Well, we do. What we do is we obviously like to keep people informed with what's going on. Where we do find situations where agents come to us recommending an energy assessor, it would be good if we knew who that assessor was. So we do also, you know, we have about 950 people registered with us who are assessors. And it goes to improve the whole messaging, so that when assessors, we had a call yesterday from an assessor who went to one of our agents who recommended us, and he knew about us and so forth. So it just aids credibility, really, for the assessor as well as ourselves.
A minute and 20 seconds left, so I'll start wrapping this up now. Peter, thanks ever so much for coming on. It's been most interesting. I hope what you've shared with us today can be helpful to those DEAs who may be looking to break into the HIP market and perhaps cast a more critical eye over whose services they sell. Next week will be the last show of this year. I'm not sure when the next one will be, but I am actually thinking perhaps if anybody is interested to come on in the week between Christmas and New Year, please do email me and just wing it, whatever. A bit of a fun one. And that's about it, really. Thanks ever so much for listening, Peter. Any last words?
No, that's all. All I would say was, you know, it's a good business if you stay focused on who you're selling to, and just make sure you don't sell yourself short when you're talking to providers.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. Thanks again. All the best. Bye bye now. Say goodbye. Peace.
Thanks. Goodbye.
You're listening to the DEA podcast. Podcast at Energy Best Performance Certificate.org. You might have